live to live righteously. It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode number 247, where we talk with Mitch Davis, and we're going to talk about him, his life, and also a new movie that's coming out on the 6th of October called The Stray. And the nice thing about that is that it's a combination of both the movie and your life, because the movie is your life.
Well, it's kind of bizarre the way that worked out. Yeah, the movie is about me, by me, and by my family.
Seems a little self-indulgent, Mitch.
It's a little, you know, it was not my idea, actually.
Okay.
This is a story that has been in our family for years, and our youngest son grew up hearing this story. He wasn't alive when the story happened, and he came to my wife and I a while back and said, hey, I want to make a movie about this.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, no, it's like a family story. And he said, no, I think it's a cool... So he wrote the script, he handed it to me and said, let's do this. And after I reluctantly read it, I agreed with him that there was a movie there, and so here we are.
So
voila.
So son wrote the script and said, Dad, your story needs to get out. Is that what?
Yeah, there's sort of a family myth and legend, whatever you want to call, about Pluto the Wonder Dog.
Okay.
And Dad getting hit by lightning. And those two stories live large in the Davis home, and four of our five kids were alive when this happened, but our fifth was not yet born. And so he, Parker, is the one who came to me. It's cool because Parker, our youngest, wrote the script. Our middle son, Marshall, edited the movie and colored it. And then our oldest son, Christian, composed the music. So,
really?
Yeah.
So it really is sort of a family opus of sorts.
It is. It's by us, for us, about us. By us, for the world, about us. My wife was the associate producer. And so there are four or five Davis names in the credits.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Stop for a second. People may not know who Mitch Davis is. I think probably most popular or most known for Other Side of Heaven.
Yeah.
Other than that, you've done a bunch of things, but other things of note. You've been here in the Cultural Hall for a film. It was 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Christmas Eve?
Christmas Eve with Patrick Stewart. Yeah.
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 Other things. Tell people other things that you've done.
You know, I can, if I can boast about anything, I think it's kind of cool that that I've had the privilege of directing two Academy Award winning actors. I mean, Anne Hathaway didn't have her Academy Award at the time. She got it later. She was in The Other Side of Heaven. I did a movie with F. Murray Abraham called Language of the Enemy. And then I did a movie with Patrick Stewart. So this last movie doesn't have the hugest cast. I really, really believe it's going to be a breakout opportunity for both of the adult leads in the movie.
In the movie The Stray you're talking about?
In the movie The Stray, yeah. The male lead who plays me, his name is Michael Cassidy. He was in Batman versus Superman and Argo, and he's the lead in a series right now called People of Earth.
Yeah, he looks very familiar, and I don't want to insult you, but he's a little better looking than you are.
He's a lot better looking than me, which is the best decision I ever made.
You're like, who looks like me? You start to get what Mitch sort of thinks of himself, right? As you look, he's like,
Now that's a funny story, because actually my son Parker, who wrote the script, the original script, he had a lot to do with casting me. He made a lot of suggestions,
Stop real quick. I'd love to know the suggestions that he had.
That's what I'm not going to tell you the names.
Oh, come on.
Because the first 15 names that he threw over the transom, they were all ugly toads. They were ugly, and they were all comedians.
He's
and
like,
I said,
Dad, I'm thinking Steve Buscemi.
That was one of the names. That was the name. And I'm like, dude.
Thanks, Parker.
Yeah, so this is what he said. No, Dad, you got to realize you're a little quirky. You're a little, I said, a little quirky. I'm not that quirky.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, come on. Dish me one more name that he thought should play
Ike
you.
Ike Barinholtz.
Okay.
And Jermaine Clement. And
from
I'm
Flight
just,
of the Conchords.
I'm just like,
awesome.
Oh, yeah, son, you know.
Sure, you bet.
Yeah.
You bet, Parker.
Quirky are us, but not that quirky.
Meanwhile, you have a paper in front of you, and you're like, out of the will. We'll just go ahead and take care of that.
Yeah, no.
So how did you get this guy?
So we just lucked out. I mean, we did not hire a casting director and do the audition thing. Mm-hmm. We just started working through our own lists and making offers. And this was one of the first names that Parker put in front of me where I looked at him and I thought, okay, you know, I wouldn't be ashamed if he played me. I mean, and he looked fairly athletic. So I thought, you know, he has to take his shirt off at least once in the movie.
Right.
And I don't want him to have the pudge gut that I do. So, anyway, we just made an offer. He really responded to the material. And we had the most amazing experience with him and Sarah Lancaster, who plays my wife. Just had a ball.
Let's talk about her. Where would people know her from?
Know her from a lot of TV. Most recently, Chuck.
Okay.
And before that, Everwood. Before that, Saved by the Bell.
Okay.
And then on the feature film side, she was just in a movie with Robert Downey Jr. called The Judge. Huh. Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Duvall.
Cool.
So she's a great actress, a great, great human beings, both of these people. I loved them both because both of them, when they were negotiating with us, said, now I have to have 3 days off during the middle of the shoot. And one was for their child's preschool graduation.
Uh-huh.
The other one was for their child's preschool camp out.
Okay.
And I just thought, these people are like us. You know, they put their family first, and it shows when they make the movie.
I would think, though, you know, you joke around about the Steve Buscemi kind of side of things. I would think that would have to be the most difficult type of casting, both for you and for your wife, who you said associate produced on this, to be like, okay, we're going to trust our story or essentially my identity with this person. And you can ask them questions, you can get a feel for them, but at some point you just kind of go, and here's hoping the best. Take
yeah,
it.
No, that's really true. That's really true because Michael Cassidy, you know, he's best known for his earlier work in The O.C. as mm-hmm. a surfer dude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like, surfer dude plays Mitch. Okay.
Well, sure.
So, but I got to tell you, the minute the camera started to roll, and even before that, the first day that they showed up, Sarah and Michael, we got all of the kid actors who play their children in the movie,
mm-hmm.
and we did a hike. We went up to Stuart Falls outside of Sundance, and just on the trail, just watching him interact with the little kid actors and with Sarah, who would play his wife, I just knew I knew we were in good shape, and it turned out to be a love fest. It really did. We were just great friends.
Is it common to do things like that? To have like a when you get to know the actors, or is that just something you do? Or talk
that's
about
just
that?
Something I did. I've never done it before, but it worked really well. And Michael and Sarah, they both came to me and they said, "We've never done anything like this."
Yeah, because that's not... we're going to take you hiking to a waterfall. Meh. Okay,
no.
So is this?
No, they
were
like
here.
Should we do a table reading of the script, or you know, no, let's go for a hike. But it really worked well because it created a family dynamic on the trail. And actually, we got caught in a storm, which was kind of true to our movie's storyline. So it was all good. It was all good.
I don't know how much of the movie you actually want to divulge. You've sort of you talked about being struck by lightning.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll get to that here in a little bit. But drop us in. So you've said this is a family story. It has these two kind of parts. But what is this movie about?
So it's a PG rated family film. It's an inspiration.
All right. Yeah. I like that so far.
So far, so good. It tells the true story of our family during a very hectic, dysfunctional time in our life.
For my family, that would be any time
yeah.
of my life ever. But
we're still in that time.
Yeah, I was going to say. So the movie doesn't end, huh?
No, it's when we were a young family in our late 20s, early 30s, lots of kids, lots of activity, too much work, not enough money.
Mm-hmm.
And a stray dog shows up, and we make the decision against our better judgment to take in a stray dog. And that stray dog ends up really kind of repairing our family in a lot of beautiful kind of magical ways. And then he ends up saving my life when we are struck by lightning on a camping trip.
All right, I'll go there now. Let's talk about it.
Yes. Talk about lightning.
Talk about being struck by lightning. So you're here in Utah?
No, we were living in Colorado at the time. We had just moved to Colorado, and our 9-year-old son, Christian, who was our oldest, it was summertime. We wanted to help him make some friends in the neighborhood. So we talked to a few of the neighbors, and they had sons Christian's age, and we three boys, our dog Pluto and myself, headed up into the mountains for a 3-day, 2-night backpacking trip.
Okay.
And
it sounds perfectly fine so far.
Everything's good. It's July. It's late July. Weather's going to be fine. We start hiking up the mountainside, and it starts to snow. And I'm thinking, wow, this could maybe turn into a real kind of freak blizzard.
Mm-hmm.
I got three little boys and a dog, so let's get them inside. So we stopped hiking, pitched the tent, put them inside the tent to warm up. And I was fixing them some hot chocolate, and that's the last thing I remember, because I took a direct hit from a bolt of lightning to my heart. And
wait a minute.
Yes, I'm still living. I'm still here.
How were you in here before and we didn't talk about how you got struck by lightning? Has this just been a really well-kept sort of secret in your family? Did I just not ask the right lightning-striking questions?
If it was a well-kept secret before, it's not anymore, because it's a world-class movie.
Yeah.
It's going to be everywhere. So, So I took a bolt to the heart, and I don't remember any of it. The last thing I remember is starting to fix the hot chocolate. But the boys tell me that the bolt came through the tent roof, hit me in the heart. Most of it went through me on the left side into the dog who was seated next to me. I flew back, and what lightning was left in me went from my right arm, it shot out my hand, kind of like Spider-Man.
What?
Into the kid next to me, and the three of them got shocked and burned, and but I was knocked out. The boys say I was on my back with my eyes open, but rolled back into my head, so all I could see was the whites of my eyes.
Oh my gosh.
And they said that they say I wasn't breathing for several minutes. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what their perception was.
Oh my gosh!
And it was a wild time. I don't remember anything for several minutes, and then after several minutes, all of a sudden, I regained consciousness in my head. I didn't wake up, but I could hear. I began to be able to hear again. And my right eardrum had been blown out in the lightning strike, so
sure.
I couldn't hear very well, but I could hear the boys crying and screaming and praying, and I heard my son say, you know, "Don't die, Dad, please don't die." I heard one of the boys promise God he would never do another bad thing in his entire life if I would just wake up.
I hope you're holding that kid to it, by the way.
Every day I send him a text.
Yeah. Remember, no bad things today.
Actually, one kid tried to give me mouth-to-mouth respiration.
Mm-hmm.
He gave me one puff. That was it. I got one, and that I guess that was all he could stand. It didn't work. So I just laid there and listened to this, and then a very kind of specific thing began to happen. I began to realize that I was dying, and I was,
oh my gosh,
I was leaving. I was departing the scene. And that was very difficult. That was very frightening and painful. There was sort of like a dark, ominous presence that I felt was smothering me, and that wouldn't let me stay or speak or anything. I was just being snuffed out. And I felt intuitively that if I could pray, I might be okay. But it was like my tongue was stuck. I couldn't even formulate a prayer in my mind. I was being just smothered. And then I had a spiritual experience, which you see some of in the movie.
Okay.
Not all of it, but I sort of heard a voice. And the voice, first thing was to reassure me that I was good enough. Told me I was okay, that he loved me, and he approved of me. And then the next thing was a very specific kind of encouragement: ask in confidence. And hearing that reassurance, feeling that presence, I was able finally to formulate a prayer in my mind. And it was one word. It was Father. All I had to do was say Father, and the darkness fled and my eyes rolled forward. I popped my head up. I regained consciousness. I looked around and, well, what happened? And the boy said, "Dad, we got hit by lightning." I said, "We did not. not. Come on. And then they took their flashlight and put it up on the ceiling of the tent, and there was a smoking hole in the nylon. And I, no, I guess we did. So it was a crazy night. And that's, you know, that's a good part of the movie. That's sort of the end of the second act of the movie. It's not all that the movie's about. The movie's about a father who became a workaholic and lost his way.
Sure.
So, and finds his way with the help of a stray dog, with the help of a great wife, great kids, and with the help of a bolt of lightning that helped him kind of reprioritize.
I've got some very technical questions about the lightning strike that I want to ask you. Let's take a break for a second. We'll come back, and we'll get to some of those questions and then talk a little bit more about the movie and maybe some of the other things that you have coming up. We'll take a break for just a second and come back in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
The Cultural Hall wants you to help Utah Food Bank fight hunger statewide. Through your donations of food, time, or money, Utah Food Bank is able to distribute over 31 million meals annually to Utahns facing hunger. Even a $1 donation can be turned into $7.35 of goods and services. One in five children in Utah could go to bed hungry tonight, and 423,000 Utahns are unsure where their next meal will come from. By donating food at your local pantry or by visiting utahfoodbank.org, you can make a difference.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and Mitch, I need to ask you, you get struck by lightning, like your fingernails melt and your hair and eyebrows and stuff, right?
I've learned a lot about lightning since having been struck. It's really very it's very capricious. It changes its mind. It does different things to different people. In my case, I had burn marks all over my body wherever the lightning went, and it was. And once I finally took my shirt off at home the next day, you could see exactly where the lightning went because there were red streaks of kind of first, second degree burns.
Oh my gosh!
Like a bad sunburn is what it looked like. Burned all the hair out of my armpit and some of the hair off the back of my head. Blew out an eardrum, but it didn't severely injure me. And then, as I said, the lightning shot out my right arm into the kid next to me and went from one to the next. The last,
like a bad game of, what is that called when you're a kid, when you brush your feet along the carpet and then everyone holds
static.
Hands and then you shock the one and it gets the guy on the end and you're like, ah!
Yeah, well, it was the last kid. Where the lightning hit him was on his left buttock, and for some reason, he had a hematoma the size of a grapefruit.
Oh my God!
It looked like somebody had kicked him as hard as they could, repeatedly. You never quite know what it's going to do. You never know. I talked to a guy who was on a fishing trip and got blown out of all of his clothes. And
is there like a support group where all you guys get together and go, my name is Mitch,
and I'm a lightning-holic.
I'm a lightning-holic survivor.
No, you know, actually, it's funny you'd say it. There actually are those kinds of groups.
I knew it!
And I'd never joined one, but I became sort of the mascot of a club of lightning-aholics. They did a paper on me. The doctor that I finally went to was so fascinated. He said, you know, you got a direct hit. You didn't get, like, you weren't just in the vicinity. You got a direct hit. He said, you guys never survived, so we're going to do a paper on you. And he took me to a lightning specialist, and there's a paper in some medical journal somewhere about my case. But whatever.
Scars?
No real scars. No real scars. Just the eardrum. The eardrum has never healed properly. And I have kind of bad balance because that ear isn't quite right.
Right, and they tried to do a reconstructive thing and it didn't quite work?
Yeah, I've had surgery on it twice, yeah. And it just keeps.
I'm in the same boat. Mine not from being struck by lightning, but I have no eardrum on the right-hand side, and they've tried to rebuild it, and it just...
Yeah, so never go scuba diving. That's a bad thing if you don't have an eardrum.
That's how I did mine.
Uh-huh.
But I got a really good deal on the scuba diving before it happened. That's how that happened. Kids go to licensed scuba places when you travel abroad and make sure that they seem like they know what they're doing. Don't just go cheap places.
Agreed.
So you decide to do this film. Was there really much salesmanship on the part of your kid to get you to do it? Was it really a lot of pushback, or was it just like, you know what, I'm hesitant, but you've got a really great thing, and now we're pushing it through? Because I've got to imagine other people talking to you about it do say the same thing that I do. You know, a little self-indulgent, Mitch.
Yeah. Well, no, there really was salesmanship on his part and persistence. I strongly dissuaded him. My wife did as well. And he persisted. 6 weeks later, he handed me a completed screenplay. I put it beside the bed and didn't read it for 2 weeks.
So take that, kid.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, there were a couple of reasons. One was that it was a personal story and it felt a little invasive. But the other was...
From the aspect of how sometimes church leaders encourage us not to share spiritual stories, right? They're sacred, not to be shared with a lot of people.
And now it's becoming a very, very public tale. But then the other aspect was, I didn't know if his version of the script was going to be any good, if I was going to like it. And how do you tell your own kid, hey, I love you, but I hate your screenplay? You know?
I don't know where you learned how to do this, but it certainly wasn't me. So let's just...
Yeah. So I was really worried about telling my kid that I didn't like his script. And so finally, after a couple weeks of the script lying there beside the bed, he said, are you ever going to read that, Dad? And so I read it, and then I was like, oh, wow, wait a minute. And I gave it to my wife, and she read it, and she's like, oh, wow, that's really good. Mm-hmm. And so we took it on and made it happen. But yeah, self-indulgent, completely understand that perception. And
I think it's awesome. Don't let me attack you with self-indulgence.
Yeah, well,
if I could make a movie about my life, not only would it be rated R, but I'm sure that too many people would want to see it. But I just don't think it's...
It's not all sweetness and light. I mean, in order for me to convey that I, the Mitch Davis character, had to grow and change and improve, I had to show myself as a pretty, you know, crummy dad.
Which, to be fair, it sounds like, if I can make the assertion, you were.
I was a busy, busy guy. And people ask me what I would like the world to take away from the movie. And I think the biggest thing, two things. One, God lives. He loves us. He knows us. He knows where we are and what we need, even if we're on a mountainside in the middle of nowhere, having been struck by lightning.
Sure.
But number two, and this is perhaps a you know, more practical day-to-day message from the movie, is, hey, it all happens at once. All of the greatest stresses in life occur when you got a young family. Your career stress is at its highest. Your family stress is at its highest. Your marital stress is at its highest point. Your financial stress, it all happens at once. And it's hard when it's all happening to see clearly. Hmm. And what was beautiful about making this movie for my wife and I was to sit back and relive all of the chaos, all of the madness, and realize how beautiful it was and how wonderful it was. And also to be sort of proud, but mostly grateful that we got through it, that we got through it intact, that we stuck together instead of pulling apart. And that Heavenly Father sent an angel in the form of a dog to teach us the lessons we needed to learn and kind of coax us through the rebuilding process that we needed to go through.
What advice can you give to people that may be in your similar situation, right? Young family, lots of stress, lots of kids. What advice could you give to those individuals so they don't have to get struck by lightning?
Oh. Yeah, I would say do not go hiking in Colorado during a storm.
You
no.
you know what I mean.
Yeah, no. It's hard to be wise about this and not sound just kind of glib, but believe it or not, these are the best of times and the worst of times. I mean, all the chaos, it's all over too soon. But it's all worth it. Every bit of it is worth it. I mean, I'm at a place now where I have 5 kids. They're all married. Got 8.5 grandchildren. And one of our grandkids lives in the basement apartment of our house.
Awesome.
She comes up to the top of the stairway every morning and knocks on the door. Gammy, Gramps, I want pancakes. And, you know, when you're sitting down having pancakes with your 3-year-old granddaughter who adores you and who you adore, it's just really hard to not think, wow, it's worth it. It's all worth it. And there are thousands of times along the way where my wife or I could have made different choices and we could have ended up in a different place with the real disaster of a family. And I'm just so grateful that didn't happen. Having said that, all families matter, and all families are beautiful. Single-parent families matter and are beautiful, in some ways more exquisitely beautiful and powerful than a 2-parent family.
Sure.
I mean, they just... So I...
The capacity of a single parent, for sure. I can't even believe it. My mom, with 5 kids in her house...
Yeah.
I mean, not to say that my dad wasn't around and helping, but, I mean, the brunt of it fell on my mom's shoulders. Having done it with my ex-wife with 1 kid, I just am like, I don't understand how that is even a fathomable position to be put in.
Yeah. So I guess all I'm saying is, no matter the situation, no matter the definition or the category of your family, it is where it's at, and it is worth the fight. I remember hearing a lady give there used to be a cigarette commercial when I was a kid for Lucky Strikes. And you would see a male model or a female model with a black eye, and they would say, "Lucky Strike, I'd rather fight than switch." Implying that they had gotten into a fight to not give up their Lucky Strike cigarettes. I just heard somebody in a fireside one time talk about her marriage, and she was talking about her marriage very candidly, and it wasn't always pretty. And she said, "You know, a good marriage is when you'd rather fight than switch." So anyway, I've gone on too long about that.
No, I don't think so at all.
But there are 2 strays in this movie, the stray dog and the stray dad.
This movie is particularly unique because of its wide opening.
Yeah.
For you, right? This is like, this is not like, you know, you can see it maybe if you go on an odd day at the Art House Theater here in Salt Lake. Let's talk about that.
Really, really excited about that. Excited that this movie has been embraced by the broad Christian community, the dog-loving community, as well as the LDS community. We're going to be opening in between 600 and 1,000 screens.
It's awesome.
On October 6th, nationwide, all major markets. And I spent the entire day yesterday interviewing with Christian publications and blogs and radio and TV stations. They have embraced the movie wholeheartedly. In fact, I'm leaving tomorrow to Houston, where Joel Osteen is doing a sneak preview premiere event at his theater complex at Lakewood Church in Houston. So that's been really, really exciting and gratifying, you know, to just see that some of the barriers that there have been in the past between different faiths have come down.
If I watch it, do I know you're Mormon?
No.
So it's just, it is a God-believing, Christian-based film. It's not, there isn't any sort of thing that I go, what that is, Mitch.
No, there's none of that. And it was no purposeful obfuscation. There was just no need to.
Because oftentimes I feel like with folks that are Mormon, like we really feel like we have to tell people for some reason, and I don't know why, because it always kind of, it's like, this is a great story. We don't need to be heavy-handed about it. People can find out, or people can ask, you know, maybe because it's out of Utah or whatever, can get that kind of you know, tone to it or something like that. But when it's like, well, it's because we're Mormon, I'm like, okay,
this is a family that prays. This is a family that prays for each other, with each other, about each other, and that's part of the fabric of the family. But there's nothing uniquely LDS about this, other than the fact in my own life that, you know, this movie does depict the years and the events immediately preceding the creation of The Other Side of Heaven, which is a movie that a lot of people in the LDS Church have seen. You know, that movie, this movie kind of tells the true story of the things that happened in our family's life right before we made that movie. So there's nothing uniquely LDS. And sometimes I think we think we're a lot more unique than we really are.
Right.
The whole scripture about being holy and peculiar. Well, I think really any Christian of any category of Christianity is holy and peculiar in his or her own way.
Especially in given the current landscape of the world.
I think anyone who adheres to
a moral compass and religious code, I think, could be considered a peculiar person. I want to take a break again for a second and come back in the third block, and I want to talk about, you know, you've got this film coming out on the 6th of October. I want to talk about if you have some other stuff coming up, and then I want to talk to you about a few things that are kind of going on in the film industry within the LDS Church, and
great,
and get some kind of feedback from you on that and what you think. We'll come back and do that in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Hi, friends. Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. I get a lot of emails with feedback from customers. Here's one. Dear Dan, I just had the best experience ever. I bought a computer from Shane at your State Street store. I asked several what I thought were really stupid questions. Shane was super courteous and made me feel comfortable through the whole process. People need to understand how important it is to support a local company, especially when your experience is so good. PC Laptops really does love me. Signed, Satisfied. I love hearing feedback like that. It really just gives me the chills. It's the whole reason why I got into the computer business in the first place. You can get a brand new PC Laptops desktop for as low as $799, and it comes with a lifetime warranty. That means if anything goes wrong, we're going to take care of you. Just check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. At PC Laptops, we really do love you.
The Cultural Hall wants you to help Utah Food Bank fight hunger statewide. Through your donations of food, time, or money, Utah Food Bank is able to distribute over 31 million meals annually to Utahns facing hunger. Even a $1 donation can be turned into $7.35 of goods and services. 1 in 5 children in Utah could go to bed hungry tonight, and 423,000 Utahns are unsure where their next meal will come from. By donating food at your local pantry or by visiting utahfoodbank.org, you can make a difference.
It's time for the third block of the Cultural Hall, and my guest is Mitch Davis here. We're talking about the movie The Stray. You might remember him from The Other Side of Heaven, not necessarily in The Other Side of Heaven, but directing that. I want to ask you about, first of all, what you have coming up next. Obviously, it's all the media and all the things until the film comes out on the 6th of October, but is there something sitting on the back burner that you're like, here's the next thing, I'm ready for this?
You know, I have some writing assignments that I'm doing with some, I'm collaborating with some people on some films that they're probably going to direct and produce.
Okay. LDS Church films or just otherwise?
If I told you, I'd have to kill you.
Okay. Well, I don't want to die, so keep it to yourself.
Yeah. I have three projects that I'm actively pursuing right now. One is called Coach Tony.
Okay.
Tells a true story of a basketball coach extraordinaire who became a basketball coach extraordinaire because he was born with a deformed face and got made fun of a lot and figured out that basketball was one thing he could depend on. No matter how many times he pushed it down, it came back,
came back up
just as strong. And he became a basketball phenomenon from the Deep South. It's kind of Blindside with basketball. A really colorful, great character. Another project I'm working on is an adaptation of a book that Elder Oaks wrote called The Carthage Conspiracy, which tells the trial, the story of the trial of the accused assassins of Joseph Smith, and tells the story of the martyrdom itself. Really excited about that project. And then
I have questions about that.
Well, you want to ask them now or you want to come back?
I don't know. I've heard that, this may be just wild speculation, but I've heard that one of the things that Joseph Smith yelled when he jumped out of the window was...
A Masonic.
Is that true?
Well, it depends on which historian you ask. I believe it's true.
I believe it is too.
I believe it's true. Yeah. Brigham Young believed that the plot to kill Joseph Smith was a Masonic plot and that it was a Masonic act. About 60% of the mobbers were Masons.
Crazy.
And the heads of all of the Masonic lodges in the counties surrounding Carthage were all there. And according to reports, when he did call out, "O Lord, my God," raised his hands over his head, the mob stopped shooting and they looked around like, "What should we do?" And they looked, and one guy yelled, "Just shoot the blankety blank scoundrel," and then they all went back to shooting and killed him. So
I hope that's part of the film.
It is part of the film.
Okay.
It is part of the film.
I think that stuff is so fascinating.
It is. Our history is so rich and so colorful, and so little of our true history has ever been
shared.
It's really a terrible shame. It's a terrible shame because it's just rich.
Is it just the simple narrative is easy to tell? Is that why it's been sort of watered down, right? Like,
I think the sharp edges have been rounded off, filed off out of an institutional fear that Jack Nicholson, you can't handle the truth.
Right? Well, and in a way, I think the institution was right, because if you look at, you know, since the onslaught of the internet,
happening. It's, yeah.
You know, people are going, I don't know. I don't know what this is. I don't know how to go. I'm out.
No, it's a really delicate balance. It's a really delicate balance, and it's a balance that I'm striving to achieve in the Carthage Conspiracy project. We got to tell the truth.
Yeah.
We got to tell the truth because the truth makes us free. Half-truths make us half free. Half free is half enslaved.
Right.
And right now we're reaping the harvest of years. The internet has forced a discussion that we weren't really prepared to have.
Right.
And it's tragic, the numbers of good people, returned missionary Temple married people who are saying what and walking away.
Right. Because, on some level, it's fascinating because it's this feeling of betrayal. Right. Like, I've done this my whole life. I went in 2 years and I taught this and I never heard blank.
Yeah. And the assumption always is, well, the church hid that from me.
Right.
And it's like, well, no, it's just you don't lead with that. You don't say, hey, oh, by the way, we are a milk and bread church because we're constantly in the mode of converting new people.
Right.
So we don't get to the steak very often, the hard raw meat.
Mm-hmm.
We stay in the milk and bread mode a lot because we always have new converts all around us. And I don't think there's anything nefarious about it, but it's had a significant impact on the current generation. So that's Carthage Conspiracy.
Jeez, I'm sold on that. Where do I send my check?
I'll just take it on my way out the door.
Deal.
And then the third project is a similarly, it's a fun project called Viracocha.
Okay.
And I like to call it a Mormon missionary movie on psychedelic mushrooms.
Okay.
It's based on true events story of a Peruvian missionary who stumbles across the legend of Viracocha.
I don't know anything about Viracocha.
And Viracocha, I'll tell you very quickly, it's true, absolutely true. that in Peruvian Inca history, there was a great white healer god who came to the Incas, taught them how to grow crops, live in peace, and heal their sick, and promised to someday return from the east.
Yeah, so Jesus.
When the Spanish conquistadores showed up in Peru, there was a temple in Cusco. There were 50 of them, actually, and they had Greek golden statues of this great white healer god, Viracocha. So this is a missionary movie about a missionary who becomes obsessed with finding one of these golden statues because he thinks they still exist. So it's Romancing the Stone meets God's Army in Peru. There you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's based on a book written by a friend of mine named Scott Hoyt about his missionary experiences. While a missionary, he became very interested in this history and tracked it throughout his mission and wrote a book about it. So that's what
I'm
doing.
So which part do you want me to play in which movie? Because I'm open. I feel like I've got the long enough hair and the beard. If I let it go for a little while, I could probably Carthage Conspiracy.
You could be a great white healer god, and you could also be a ruffian from Missouri with a musket. I'm not quite sure which I prefer.
Listen, okay. I'll tell you this quick story. I've shared it here in the Cultural Hall before, but you know who Del Parson is?
Yes.
Artist for a church, drew probably one of the most iconic paintings of the Savior. It's the one that you see most in the entryways of the chapel.
Yeah.
He lives in southern Utah, or did at the time that I had the opportunity to interview him. He said, you know, I'm really looking for a model for one of my paintings. And I couldn't believe it. Because he was talking to me. He said, you know what, I think you'd really be a great model for one of my paintings. I was flattered, right? I'm thinking, you know, this is a guy who painted the Savior that everybody sees. And so I said, well, who is it that you need me to be a model for? He's like, you'd make a great Judas. It didn't ever come to fruition, but I just was thanks.
Thank you very much.
And he's like, how much would it cost me to have you be the model? And I said, just a few pieces of silver.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That's a great story. No, I wouldn't let you be Judas.
Okay, good.
You're too sympathetic.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how, again, familiar you are with this, but there's a film that's being funded through Kickstarter right now called Reign of the Judges. It's a short film. Are you familiar with this project?
I've heard about it from my sons.
Okay.
Yeah, my sons have followed it on social media.
So it's sort of a fascinating story. From what I understand, it's gonna be a short film based kind of on the reign of the judges within the Book of Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
It is the third highest film Kickstarter on Kickstarter. So there's definitely some note and some interest there. But when you go to get funded, you go to funders, right? You don't go through a crowdfunding.
Right.
What do you think? Give me the pros and cons of both sides, I guess.
I make it a policy to never comment on what other filmmakers do.
Okay.
Because it's kind of thou shalt not judge.
Sure.
I don't know their motivations. I don't know their situation. I don't know their talent. I don't know enough about it. So I do know that it's kind of a curious combination in the church and in Christian filmmaking. There's kind of a curious mixture of faith with works.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of investments that are perhaps more straightforward, more predictable, and less risky than investing in a movie.
Sure.
So when you go to approach an investor, in this case, in the Reign of the Judges, when he's going to raise money, it's you want to talk about, well, here's the reason we're making this movie.
Right.
Here's the reason this is unique. Here's the reason this is better than buying a piece of real estate in Kanab.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's because we're going to change the world. We're going to save the world. We're going to preach the gospel. We're going to whatever. And then they refer to that, I think, as psychic income, you know.
Okay.
Whether you get financial income, financial remuneration, or whether what you get is a psychological, spiritual return, that's a legitimate return also.
Right.
So, but I, you you know, there have been an awful lot of LDS-themed films made. Some of them have made money. Some of them have made no money. Some of them have made a lot.
Yeah.
And everything in between. I don't think it's... I don't think anyone should be surprised when an independent film doesn't make a ton of money when only one out of six studio-funded films turn a profit.
Right.
You know, it's a risky, difficult business. But I do think, as a people, we should not be afraid to let our light shine, and we should not sit around and wait for the institution of the LDS Church to do everything for us.
Yeah,
you know, of our own free will and choice, we should do good things and
Absolutely.
Powerful things, and there are a lot of things that we can do as individuals that institutions can't do, and. And just because we can be speedboats to their aircraft carrier, you know, we can
right.
be and so they're I don't know I'm speaking a lot of obtuse phrases, but I think hopefully there's
no I think that you answer the question the way that that I guess I sort of figured, but I wanted to get your take on it. So
yeah
I want to. It would be people would be at loss if I didn't remind you that. A great idea for a film is a documentary about elders in a district, seeing them 20 years after they served their missions and doing it like a documentary. That's an idea I've had that I've pitched to every director that's in here, and no one will take me up on it, but it's a great idea. So
now, are you talking about a mockumentary or a documentary?
No, like a real documentary. Like, these 12 elders all went to the MTC at the same time.
Right.
Here they are 20 years later.
Yeah.
You know, where are they? This one's still in the church. This one is doing this.
Yeah.
This one's story is...
I'll do it.
You money for it.
Okay.
How much you need? Be honest right now.
$150,000.
Okay. If I get $150,000 and I come back to you, we're doing this film.
Okay. Does it have to be your district?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
I mean, it'll be most interesting if it's my district, but no. Now time to get the three questions in. Currently have a calling, and if so, what is it?
We just moved, my wife and I, and we had been in the ward all of 1 week.
Nice.
When we were called to be the trek leaders for the Pioneer Trek the ward is taking next year.
Good for you. I've never done that, and I've always wanted to. Have you done it before?
We were a ma and pa on a trek and had a blast in our prior ward. So we're excited about this. My wife hates to camp, so that's going to be a little problem. I may be a bachelor or a
bachelor pa.
I may be a widower out on the trail without a wife.
But she's like, here's the story.
Yeah.
We'll make this like a real trek. I died the first day.
You can bury me beside the trail on an air mattress.
Yes, perfect. If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
Oh, young men's president.
Yeah, you love the young men.
It's where it's at. You know, when you're dealing with kids 12 to 18, you can just have such an impact. And they're all... You know, they're all looking for something, and you can provide it in many cases. So I love that.
Awesome. And then the final question that we ask everyone who steps in here is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part of my faith is the recent understanding that faith is a creative force. Faith makes things true that would not otherwise be true. For example, it is not true that without faith you could feed 5,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fishes.
Mm-hmm.
But it is true that with faith you can.
Yeah.
And it is not true that a man can walk on water without faith. But with faith it is true. Take that, extrapolate from that a little bit, and you get to the thing we were talking about earlier, which is LDS history.
Mm-hmm.
It is not true that a flawed man could be a prophet of God and translate the Book of Mormon without faith. But with faith, it is true.
Right.
It is not true. I mean, that a church could make policy decisions that affect an entire race of people for hundreds of years and be God's church without faith. But with faith, it is true.
Hmm.
So I'm just thinking a lot about faith right now.
Sure.
Because so many people around me are losing their faith.
Yeah.
And And I just think we all need to look at faith as a creative force that, you know, what does the scripture say? Faith is when you hope for things which are not seen, which are true. So I hope for a perfect church. I don't see a perfect church, but the church is still true. Mm-hmm. I hope for perfect leaders in my ward and stake and church at large. I don't see them, but the church is still true.
Right.
Anyway, I've been trying to find a way to express what I just tried to express for the last several months, and I don't think I've still quite pulled it off.
It was pretty good.
But I'm getting there. So I'm thinking a lot about faith. Faith is a creative force.
I love it. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row.